Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 US-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything: data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game. Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Get ready, Ohio. FanDuel, America's number one sports book, is coming to the Buckeye State. And to kick things off, you can get started with $100 in free bets as an early sign-up bonus. Plus, when you sign up today with promo code OhioFD, you'll be all set when FanDuel goes live in Ohio. Then you can bet on all your favorite teams in all your favorite sports with $100 in free bets. Just download FanDuel's top-rated sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Ohio, this is your chance to get in on the action. Join today with promo code OhioFD. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 or older and present in Ohio. Bonus issued in non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after FanDuel accepts its first real money sports wager in Ohio, 1-1-23. Unique user identity verification required. Offer ends on the go live date. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Let's do this fast.
Your cousin from Boston.
Sam Adams Summer Ale is brewed with a hint of citrus. Perfect for a hot summer day, like this one. End of commercial.
It's peak tanning hours, dude. I'm out.
Sam Adams Summer Ale. The Boston Beer Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Drink responsibly.
Introducing the Lowe's List for Innovation. While our aisles are filled with innovative products, we've selected our favorites just for you. Like the exclusive Whirlpool washer with industry-first 2-in-1 removable agitator. We love this washer because you can customize any load. And with other smart features to streamline your laundry routine, this product is a must-have for families. Shop the full Lowe's List of top picks at Lowe's.com. Lowe's, home to any budget, home to any possibility. U.S. only.
All right, it's another film study. If hopefully you're all caught up and you listened to us go through the really break down the defense yesterday. Today we're going to break down the offense. So, Ken McCusick, how are you doing?
Life's good, Josh. How about you?
I'm doing good. You know, until I got your show notes a few minutes ago, I thought you were going to break down Ray Lewis on Dancing with the Stars this week.
Yeah, how cool was that? I just saw a little bit of video from it. It looks like Ray might have lost some weight.
I don't know. You're up on me. I didn't see anything of it. So you know a little bit more than me, but
there's a little video. They put a very attractive woman in front of him, and he's dancing a little bit in the background. I couldn't actually tell it was Ray Lewis because it's like kind of like a small Twitter video.
Well, right, he's wearing purple. I saw a little plea from him for Raven fans to vote for him to stay on the show. I guess that's how the show works. I don't know. I've never seen it. But anyway, we're going to focus on the field, focus on the Ravens and this dominant offense that struggled a little bit more than we expected, but still put up really good numbers. And to have that conversation with us, we're welcoming Tim Jenkins, who you may know from YouTube. He has the channel Edgar Allen, where he breaks down film. Tim, how's it going?
Hey, Josh. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Now, are you prepared to talk Ray Lewis on Dancing with the Stars?
I'm unprepared.
All right. All right. Then in that case, Tim, why don't you tell us a little bit, kind of introduce yourself to our listeners first about, I know your YouTube channel. I know you're pretty active over at Purple Flock. What got you into this and everything?
Well, I'm part of the message boards over at Purple Flock, and I'd probably blame a guy over there for getting me onto the YouTube. A guy goes by the name of Joey Flex. He suggested it when I was putting a couple of the GIF things up, and I just started, I guess about a year ago, putting up Ravens-centric video, doing my best to break the stuff down and learn a little bit about the game as I'm doing it, and just started from there.
All right, that's great. All right, Ken, let me hand it over to you guys to really dig into this offense.
All right. Well, let's just take a minute, Tim, because I think the state of the division is close to as euphoric, is not the right word to describe the division, but for Ravens fans, it's about as close to utopian as it could be with a 1-5 record for the other three teams and the Ravens at 2-0. What do you think about the other teams in the division right now?
I'll tell you, I got home and watched second quarter, third quarter of the Browns last night. And just watching Mayfield, he looked a little unsettled to me, certainly inaccurate. And I was surprised to see that. I was glad to see it, but a little surprised. I like Chubb as a back, but I was not overall that impressed with them. As a unit, and maybe that's because they're not coming together just yet. I don't know. I thought Mayfield struggled with four-man pressures and reading behind that pressure. That was my impression from watching them last night.
That's definitely, if you can get four-man pressure with any kind of consistency, that's obviously the easiest way to win football games. We saw how much that flustered Flacco over the years when he was in Baltimore. Particularly when Cincinnati, of the teams that the Ravens played most regularly, could do it. And obviously a pretty regular problem for him. I was interested to see the Steelers go get Minkah Fitzpatrick in a year where it looks like they could be drafting fairly high.
Yeah.
It's just an odd trade to me. And I tell you what, we were just commenting about this before the show. We're talking a little bit about how this is going to progress, but I just find it very difficult to be on Twitter on days like this. I probably get asked 10 or 15 times a day at least, what should the Ravens trade for Jalen Ramsey? How are they going to get it done? And, you know, before that it was Minkah Fitzpatrick. Yeah. And what the common thread running through this is seems to be that people want to treat draft picks like they're Dave and Buster's tickets that come out of the machine that you go and redeem for, you know, whistles and stuff. And, you know, that's not what they are.
Right. You know, when they start talking about a one for Minkah Fitzpatrick, you know that's probably a one for Ramsey. And he seems like a, you know, pretty terrific player, but just a ton of baggage with him. And I kind of like the direction the Ravens are, you know, of course it's tempting. You know, it's tempting to see that caliber of player come here, but there does carry a certain risk. And it seems a little bit far flung from the way that DaCosta operates, or the Ravens operate in general, to me.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. And if you've looked at the last couple of drafts, where DaCosta had a big influence on the 2018 draft, obviously, and he is the, you know, ultimately responsible for the 2019 drafts and beyond, I wouldn't know that I'd want to give away any draft pick. Look at what he's done with the draft picks he's had.
I love it.
And how well that's gone, yeah.
I love it so far. I mean, I just really impressed the, you know, the Boykin, even moving up to get Boykin, which seemed like a head scratcher, you know, just, he really seems to have a plan. And I'm really excited to see how he drafts and how he develops his football team.
All right. The Bengals, I think, are too bad this year and too need of a broad upgrade to really consider. Now, they didn't play that badly in the first week against Seattle. They gave them a pretty good game, and then they got beat pretty handily, though, by the 49ers, who are probably not as bad as people think they are, or probably not as much of a pushover as people think they are, but are also probably not at the top of the NFL either.
Yeah, there were some pretty terrible stats coming out of the Bengals game versus the 49ers. They had 25 yards on the ground on 19 carries, one drive that lasted 4 minutes, you know, only one drive that lasted that long, 11, you know, just bad on defense, bad on offense, guys going down injured on the offensive line. So, you know, it's early, but that doesn't look good.
You know, I missed that, but who did go down for the Bengals on the offensive line?
Jordan, Michael Jordan, the kid out of Ohio State. And there was another guy that had a groin thing. I can't remember, a starter, though. Andre Smith, the tackle.
Okay.
I don't know his status, but.
All right, fair enough. Okay, well, let's move on and talk a little bit about the Ravens offense, because that's what we want to focus on today. And I think everybody really wants to hear about Lamar Jackson, so let's give them what they want and talk about him first. Obviously, it was a step back as a passing game for Lamar in this case. And I have some stats I'm going to get to a little bit later on this. But I think the thing to be excited about, at least from my perspective, was how well he ran the ball. And in particular, what these runs did to reduce variance of the offense. And that was very much the 2018 formula to win, was to have a dominating defense paired up with a low variance offense, is able to grind out a lot of first downs, maintain long drives, and not turn the ball over, hopefully. And in 2018, they had some fumbles, but they didn't lose too many of them. They've yet to turn the ball over this year. And the thing I love about Jackson's stats is he had 8 of his 14 runs, and he had 2 kneels as well that are in the stats, but they don't really count. Eight of his 14 runs were between 9 and 19 yards. You're going to extend a lot of drives when you have that much success running the football. And you're going to do it in single first down increments, not in the big chunk plays that will, you know, obviously put you in situations where you're going to be giving up the ball again more quickly. Not that that's bad. It's great to go up the field in 3 plays once in a while, but it's also even better to go up the field in 19 plays when you can do that.
Yeah, there were several plays where you know that his running – just has to rip the heart out of the defense. Certain conversions that he made on third down, that just, you know, only so many players are going to do that. And he's just, you know, just a spectacular weapon. And I think if I was sort of holding out an expectation, let's say, that they would not run him as much. They ran him in the first quarter down near the goal line, I think, inside the 10, and he got whacked. So they are not going to be shy about designed runs. I don't think he's going to run as much, but they're going to use him running the football. And one of the runs that he made where he got the edge, it was in the third quarter, I think. It's just amazing. He outran an angle.
Left side edge or right side?
Right side. I think it was Swearinger coming right at him.
He only had one decent run on the right side, and that was that 9-yard run that came up a yard short of a first down, but it was a good one. The bulk of his runs were on that left side, where I thought they might have designed it, they might have realized it was going to happen, but it was the same move that kept beating Chandler Jones to the outside when he was engaged in a pass rush, and all of a sudden you see the I guess it would be a 270-degree spin move from Lamar to basically head out the back door. And play after play, just like that. Ronnie Stanley did a good job supporting that as well.
Yeah, there was a series where Ronnie had just a tremendous, and maybe we can save this for the O-line talk, but he just had a tremendous sort of fake hinge block. And Lamar booted out, like you said, to the left side. And it was right on another thing that's really interesting is the way that the plays are being called. You're getting these different wrinkles from the exact same formation. there are two plays exactly the same with Ricard coming from the slot. Ingram runs, I think it's at least a 10-yard run up C-gap. And then the very next play from the exact same formation is that boot. And you see Ronnie come in, kind of cover slide in and cover C-gap or B-gap rather. And then does this beautiful fake hinge and then leads Lamar out. And yeah, just really, really great play calling and exciting stuff to watch.
Yeah, it really is exciting because we've had other guests on the show who have commented about that, both Michael Crawford and Ivan Evans when he's been on, comment about how you can have relatively few total sets of keys for the offensive linemen. Like maybe you can run it out of. I don't want to give an exact number. Maybe there's 10, maybe there's 14, you know, different ways. And just have the skill position players add the window dressing to that that creates those differences in play calls that you basically run out of the same concepts.
Right.
All right. So a little more about Lamar here. So we talked a little bit about his running, but again, his passing was the story of the week or a big part of the story for the week. He didn't have quite the air yards or the yak he had in that first game, but then he'll never have another game like that in his entire career. I think it's probably only a 25% chance he ever has a game as good. There's only been about seven since the merger that have been as good among the 158.3 perfect quarterback ratings. So the 11.3 yards per completion this week was 7.9 air yards and 3.5 yak. He did not throw a lot of yakkable balls this week. The air yards are okay at 7.9 for his average completion is pretty good. It's not at the very top of the league, but it's pretty good. Last week, it was 10.3 yards in the air and another 8.8 yards of yak. So that's not happening again. But one thing I've been loving about what Lamar's been doing this year is he is throwing the ball past the sticks on a regular basis. So far this year, he's averaged throwing 1.6 yards past the sticks per throw on the year. And of course, after years of Joe Flacco throwing short of the sticks, including on third down, which is not supposed to really, you know, be the primary option very often, it's very good to see. Part of that is just how few running back targets he's had. You know, they're not depending on the running back screen. He's finding Andrews, he's finding Snead, and mostly he's looking for Brown down the field.
Yeah, that has surprised me. The lack of targets to the running backs. I thought we would see that a little bit more, and perhaps that'll sort of blossom as the year goes on. But part of that is the route combinations and Lamar being extremely patient, having a real idea about where these routes are, where the coverage is. I think you're seeing him really leaps and bounds in how he reads coverages. And even how he's kind of manipulating a particular player by design in the secondary with his arm, with his eyes, with his shoulders. I'm also very impressed with his throws on the perimeter. You know, if you remember last year, you'd see these throws and there was no telling where the thing was going to go. Now he's just throwing with absolute confidence, balls right on the money. And really has looked good.
Yeah, I've liked that about it. And definitely going outside the numbers, you've got to expand that field and give the run game a little more room to work with, obviously, once they get to level two in particular. You know, the Ravens kind of lived off Gus Edwards' ability to make yards after first contact during their long winning streak in that second half. When he ran up the middle, he had approximately 5 yards after contact. And you know, it's an unheard of number. It's not maintainable, obviously, at that level, but it's something that really was special. And it was Lamar was a big part of the reason. But you know, in order for them to even come close to replicating that, they need to get Edwards more opportunities for the first contact in level two, where he has a reasonable chance to break a tackle and get some long runs at it, or give him to Ingram or, you know, even Hill, who's also a fairly powerful runner that we've seen. Mm-hmm. But I'm very impressed also with the way he's thrown outside the numbers. Obviously, he combined both of those elements that you just mentioned in terms of being able to manipulate a defensive back and throwing outside the numbers on that first touchdown pass to Andrews when he pump faked to Brown, then threw the ball right down the sideline to Andrews wide open because of that abandoned coverage.
Beautiful. And the other component there. You get the orbit motion with Marquise. He's coming outside of Lamar in the back behind him, and as you mentioned, Ken, he turns, Lamar turns his shoulder that way. Mm-hmm. And the other component is Snead runs that post route, that deep post, which holds.
Clears out.
Yeah. And you see Mark Andrews sort of run in an arc, kind of take an outward angle as if to be blocking for that bubble, for that screen. And you see the cornerback try to get outside of him, which clears the inside for Mark, and Mark gets up that seam, and that's all she wrote.
Yeah, killer route combination all the way around, honestly, on that one.
Yep.
All right. I mean, it is wonderful to be sitting here as a Ravens fan, not with any of the past five offensive coordinators or so, going back to Fassel probably, or even before then, but not having any of the past offensive coordinators where you knew a lot of what they were trying to do, and a lot of what they were trying to do was dictated by what Flacco really wanted to do in terms of throwing the ball short. And I don't mean to beat on Joe too much, but they've had very little that was new other than the Kubiak period where they could really adapt well to what he offered. But I think that Roman has done a fabulous job of using exactly what Lamar is good at to the maximum effect. In fact, that probably goes for a much broader set of offensive players, but we'll start with Lamar.
Mm-hmm. I think they're bringing a lot from teams like Oklahoma. I mean, that Andrews touchdown looked a lot like almost exactly like a play I saw with Marquise Brown in Oklahoma. It was a seam route that got the tight end got. It wasn't the in the end zone, but exactly the same sort of motion. And the thing I like, to your point about the Flacco era, you would watch those route combinations and guys would just go out and run a route. You know, there was never these options. There was never running to grass, and that you're seeing that more. You're seeing guys running to space. There was a nice sit down in week one where Marquise and Lamar were on the same page, and it was beautiful where Marquise sat down because of a deep off coverage right at the sticks and got a first down. And it looked like he had a three-way read to me. It looked like if he was being pressed, he could read the center of the field and run a post, or he could go with a fade. But he was being covered with off coverage, sat it down, and Lamar saw the exact same thing, and he hit him. You're seeing specific defenders for other teams targeted. They're going to put them in a bind and run these smash concepts at them. And oftentimes there's three options off the smash concept, you know, that Lamar's reading. So he's doing a wonderful job of reading all that, keeping up with that. It's really remarkable.
I agree completely with that. And particularly in terms of the ability to target defenders, even at three levels in this game, you know, Chandler Jones had a pretty good game in terms of pressure. In this game, it wasn't bad. Certainly, he definitely got movement. He twice flushed Lamar, which would have been a pressure in each case, except Lamar ran for more than 10 yards both times. I think maybe once for 11 and once for 18, might have been 11 and 14. But anyway, you get the idea. Is that you know, I would normally go through the offensive line scoring and give a negative two score to Ronnie Stanley on each of those plays, but Lamar bailed him out in each case, and I you know, he instead gets a zero on the play. So anyway, good stuff, and really happy to see him manipulating players at all level. The thing that Lamar did to Minkah Fitzpatrick in week one, I mean, there hasn't been a cornerback. I mean, first of all, Minkah Fitzpatrick, I think, is a pretty good cornerback. But he had a historically bad game in week one because they were able to isolate him in places where he shouldn't have been. Covering Marquise Brown deep is one of those places. And it was just very nice to see them be able to take advantage of those one-on-one matchups they had and really go after the guy. I know we always feel like Ravens fans, like our weakest cornerback has always been the picked on guy. It's certainly the case in week one that Averett was out there. They picked on him mercilessly and didn't throw much at Humphrey. They certainly have not thrown much at Earl Thomas the entire season so far. But you know, to be able to do that, not just play to your own team's strengths, but play to the other team's weaknesses is really nice.
That's right. It does speak to the game planning for the opponent, but also for scheme. And what I'm seeing is it isn't just a series to series where we see our coordinators making adjustment. They're doing it a play later. You know, two plays later, you're seeing them take advantage of something, an end crashing, and they'll fold Ricard out in front of Lamar because they noticed an end crashing following a pull. I'm seeing play to play kind of game planning, and the guys keeping up. You know, you've got mm-hmm. the players schematically being able to follow exactly how the coordinators are thinking. Seeing the same things, reading the same things on the same page. Again, just really, really refreshing, I think, change to observe.
All right. That's outstanding stuff. Now I'm going to have to be looking for that. You know, when did the coordinator adjust within a few plays, maybe even on the same drive or maybe the first play of the next drive kind of thing, what to something he saw? I'm going to have to be looking for that. Do you want to pick a pass that you particularly liked in the game? You kind of detailed through the Andrews pass already. Is there another one you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, there was. It's another smash concept. The one down the sideline to Ingram. I don't remember where that was in the game, but you see Andrews running out. He's kind of looking like he's running a deep route. Sort of holds the safety. Who's reading him, and then he runs it out, and Ingram is running just a straight go. So they put that DB there, the cornerback in a bind. Whether he's going to come up and cover Andrews on that out, or he's going to stay with that deep route, which is the running back, what ends up happening is he ends up biting along with the overhang defender on the flat or the out route in the flats. To Andrews, and part of that, it wasn't just a bad play. Part of that, if we go back and watch it, is Lamar. He literally, again, just turns his shoulders to Andrews' side, and then as he's throwing the football at the last second, adjusts his arm angle. You can see this. Just it's almost as if it's a no look, but he looks at the last second, and that ball mm-hmm. is on a rope between the safety. And he gets the ball, just fires that ball to Ingram before that safety can make it over. Love that throw.
Is it 5:43 of the second quarter for folks who want to look up on Game Pass or, you know, while you're listening to this at work or whatever, we encourage you to bring up NFL Game Pass and look at these plays. We don't really encourage that at work, but we'll forgive you if you do.
Yes.
All right. Outstanding. So I want to talk a little bit about ample time and space here. And this is something that we've talked about on the show before, but again, 3-second pocket is made available by the line and with a 120-degree arc, 60 degrees to either side of the intended receiver, allowing the quarterback to step into the throw. The concept of ample time and space and the standard of ample time and space has been reducing in frequency over the years. In fact, I started calculating it in 2010, and 50% was kind of the standard. The Ravens did have a good offensive line at the time, but since then it's dropped significantly, and we're down to probably in the low 40s right now. So the ball's coming out quicker. Teams are doing more defensively to try and get that fast pressure. And we're down to this last game. First game was 8 of 21 for 38%. This game was 46%, 18 of 39. Which is actually, I think, a pretty good total for today. But anyway, based on those 18 of 39 ATS opportunities, Flacco's averages for 2010 through 2017 would have resulted in an expectation of 234 net yards on those dropbacks. Now, Lamar actually had 258, which is a plus 24. I'm going to start with what that really means, because he had 39 dropbacks on that, yielding plus 24. So that's 0.6 yards per throw better than expectation, which actually is very good. But, maybe a 70th percentile game to be that good. But after he had a plus 204 game in 21 throws, that's almost 10 yards per throw better than expected. We have completely lost the scale of what a good game is for performing, you know, relative to the opportunity set. So very exciting to see Lamar back up his unbelievable game with a game that was still pretty good. And I know there are advanced metrics that say he didn't complete as many passes as he should have. He certainly didn't have as much yak, as he might have had, but he also completed more throws with more air yards than the typical quarterback would. So exciting to see him back up an unbelievably great game, one of the best in league history, with still a good game.
Yeah, I think as far as the ample time in the pocket, I noticed, and I wanted to ask you about this, Ken, I noticed more, it seems more to me, they're pulling Bozeman and pulling him into protection.
Mm-hmm.
With the back, so you're ending up sort of really, really protecting Lamar on the right side specifically, and you know that has a twofold effect, because if a linebacker is reading that guard, that pulling guard as a key, they're going to come down. But they've pulled Bozeman a ton in protection that way this year. I did see once last week where they pulled Yanda, but how much is that? What sort of effect do you think that's having?
It looks like it's a positive thing. They pulled him four times on passing plays in this game, just looking over my score sheet here. The big one was the 24-yard pass on the fifth play of the first drive of quarter two, the first full drive. And I do not have the target on that. I'm not looking at it. It was a 24-yard pass. I think it was the play before Ingram caught the 20-yard pass. So I'd have to go back and look who that was. If I had to bet, it's Andrews, but I don't know for sure.
That was Andrews. That was. Yep.
All right. So there was that. And honestly, it was incomplete all other three times that they rotated protection. That's actually a fairly ancient concept for the Ravens. And the Ravens used to run it a lot when they ran unbalanced. They used to pull grubs to the offside to provide a second offensive lineman on the side they'd left with one. So they'd run unbalanced, still pass out of it, but revert effectively to a five spread line, two to each side of the center by pulling.
Mm-hmm.
So I got in some trouble with somebody I don't remember who I was talking to. I don't think it was you, but maybe it was about counting the pulls over a period of time. And I was including pulls that included on pass plays and he wasn't. And that was the kind of the difference in definition. But it pays when you have these discussions with people to talk definitionally first before you start making specific claims about, you know, what's happened.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, maybe we should move on to the offensive line scoring. And Edgar, this is what I really thought we'd have a great discussion about, because I know this is something that you really enjoy and deal a lot with in your videos and whatnot. And I thought we'd just talk through the players one at a time and you know, let's just have a back and forth on each one as we go. I'm going to start with Ronnie Stanley, who he rebounded from a bad game one. He had a pair of holding penalties. One of them was kind of ticky-tack against the Dolphins. But he scored very well in this game. And he really only allowed one negative play as I scored it. And I gave him a third of the sack by Peters, where Bozeman got pretty badly run over. But on that same play, Stanley would have given up a pressure normally, and he allowed the pocket to be phone boothed. So I gave him a third of the sack on that play and Bozeman two-thirds. Just kind of along my lines that it usually takes more than one to get a sack in the NFL. Usually a couple of mistakes have to be made along the line, and you really have to put those together in shares to get a meaningful result. Otherwise, I would mention the two flushes he allowed, which resulted in runs of 14 and 11. He made two beautiful extended level two blocks to lead runs of 18 and 11, with the last one coming on Ingram's run.
Uh huh.
At the end of the game, and I think you mentioned you noticed another block on that run, if I recall.
Yes, Seth Roberts really just a stellar job on that run, just a key part of the game, and he comes from out. He's lined up out wide, outside the numbers, and just sprints to get that alley corner. And his guy, the guy that's guarding him, comes over too late and gets sort of an arm tackle of Ingram that Ingram runs through. But he clears that lane for Ingram to get through. It's Seth Roberts coming all the way from outside of the numbers and getting on that alley. Everybody, you know, it's a mosh pit at that point, right on that side of the line anyway. But he gets that end guy, and it's just pure effort. Really a fine play by him.
All right, outstanding stuff. Anything else, any other notes about Stanley in terms of his play in this game?
I really, every time I watch Stanley, the word that came to mind that he was battling, I just really felt like he played hard this game and held up well out on the outside. I loved that sort of fake hinge block where he ends up leading. That may be one of the runs you're talking about. He ends up leading Lamar. And, Ronnie is a good to very good tackle. And I think you're seeing a more even more athletic version of him this year. And I'm curious to see how much he will be used in a pulling role. Do you remember mm-hmm. in the first week they got him out there with the center, with Skura and Justice Hill on the edge? And so I didn't see him too much or too much outside of that. But
yeah, no pulls this week, just to let you know. He had 6 blocks in level 2, which often is the equivalent, I wouldn't call it the equivalent, but it's the mobility contribution that a left tackle can make on a run that goes right. They have to get into level 2 quickly. And Stanley's one of the few left tackles in the game that really has the feet to do that. And I agree with you. We're seeing more mobility, I think, because he's not hurt this year. I mean, is one of the issues is that he's dealt through a lot of injury. And, you know, he's obviously last year was playing through pain and having to leave individual games multiple times. And I noticed that because there's breaks on my score sheet where somebody else has to come in and Illuminor play a play or two here, play or two there. But just to be able to see him, you know, work without playing and work very effectively is great to see this year.
It is. Yep.
All right, move on. We'll talk about Bradley Bozeman. Now, he played his second straight game at left guard, so he's got the start. I don't think he's in any danger of losing it right away. He converted 10 of 11 pulls this year. Now, the Ravens are a right-handed team, but as we're going to see a little bit later, they went to some left-hand plays in terms of the pulls in this game. Yanda ended up pulling 8 times. Bozeman pulled 11. You mentioned earlier, Tim, that 4 of those were actually protection blocks, so 7 of them were cases where he's leading a run play. Okay, and I believe that was the same total for Yanda. He might add 1 protection and 7 where he's leading a run play. Bozeman now being 22 of 25 in pulls is just outstanding, though. It's exactly what they need from him kind of at the minimum to contribute at that left guard. I don't mean 22 out of 25. I mean the generalized ability to pull from left to right and not have that be a problem in terms of mobility, not have that be a problem in terms of getting a quick start on the play or not giving it away or all the things that go with that. And he's really come through. I mean, more than I would have reasonably expected, but you know, he's a guy who had 230 scored snaps last year, you know, more than that, including penalties. So he's not just starting out at the position.
Right. I think you're dead on. I think, you know, in terms of the guy at left guard that they like pulling, they need a left guard who's going to pull, and he's the guy that they trust doing it right now. And as you said, he's pulling a lot, and that pull into protection has been used, I think, pretty effectively because of the linebackers coming down. I think you said that only one of those plays actually converted to anything, but mm-hmm. but yeah, you do see the linebackers coming up on it. So just the idea that he's pulling, but perhaps to what end, you know, is interesting to me. And I think he's been very, very effective in that crazy tandem with Ricard, Foyle, and he, mm-hmm. or any of the H-backs types, just getting out there on the edge and blocking, or out in front and blocking. And right. It's fun. It's fun to watch.
It's a very scary combination to have receivers as dangerous as the Ravens have with Brown and Boykin and Andrews, and then also have the incredible point of attack weapons that you just mentioned. I mean, Ricard is an unbelievable point of attack weapon. He's the fullback that makes it worth having a fullback in the NFL. Everybody else runs out of 11 personnel, or a lot of the rest of the league does. And you know, the way they're using him in motion, I mean, there's a freight train moving across somewhere from left to right or from right to left, wherever he's coming from. Obviously, they re-signed Boyle for some of those same reasons. He's a, you know, he's been fabulous. Anyway, I'm loving the point of attack blocking, and I'm loving how defenses are torn in terms of their decision they have to make between committing additional resources to the box and beating that point of attack blocking versus actually taking additional coverage value on some of these deep threats the Ravens have.
That's right. I mean, the Ravens are just as apt to run it right at you with eight guys or a ninth near the line, and they're going to hit you. They're going to come off. They're going to come right at you and hit you when they do. But Lamar being the X factor back there, And as you said, you get single man coverage, maybe with a guy high. And they showed last week they're not afraid to that, you know, we can't not talk about that throw, that third and 11 throw.
Talk about it now if you want.
That throw put me in the mind of a throw that Joe made in, I think it was the 4th and 29 game to get him into field goal position, but not just the accuracy of it. This was probably a better ball to me than the one Joe threw there, but just the guts of it, just the straight up, I'm going to my guy. He's got one-on-one coverage. I'm going to the sideline with it. And when you see that playback of that and you slow it down and watch it, oh man, it's inches between the defender's arm and the Marquise grabbing that thing. Just the guts and the on point throw.
The thing I loved about it, I do love the throw, and it was right on the money, and he knew right where to throw it, basically a yard and a half or so inbounds, right down that right sideline, which is, by the way, is not a super easy target to hit, but he did it right. The timing was right on the throw. It in fact, because it was fully thrown out there, it didn't give the receiver a chance to get a pass interference penalty, which would have been another option there. But what I liked about it was how Brown created a little additional space. Now, he didn't get separation, but he ran and you can see him kind of pushing to the inside to at least maintain space from the sideline on that defender. And then when he had to, at the last moment, he took a different angle back to the sideline to adjust to the ball and catch it. But because he had created himself that a little bit of additional space, that may have been the difference in terms of that defender not being able to get his hand on the ball or to intercede in some other way.
Great point. Did you notice, and I thought I noticed this, but I'm not sure. Did you notice if Marquise gave him just a little bit of forearm, right? I mean, really, really subtle right before the ball got there.
I'll take your word for it. I did not notice that. You know, I'm watching him basically. The angle I'm thinking of is the all 22. So it'd be the end zone angle from behind is the camera, as I recall it, looking straight down the field and basically seeing him run basically parallel, but a little bit removed from the sidelines until it's time for him to move to adjust to the ball at the last moment. And then effectively created a little bit of additional space for himself with that movement.
Right. Good look. Yep.
All right. So anyway, let's see what else we have. Bozeman, I just want to mention also, he had a team high 5 pancakes in this game. He did get beaten for the sack by Corey Peters, and he got pretty well used on that, but he didn't have any other negative pass blocking events. So while that was something negative, I you know, it happens. And you're eventually every so often going to give up a sack in the NFL. It's nice to not have other problems. The missed blocks were his big problem in week one. He had 10 missed blocks. 8 of those were losses at the line of scrimmage. Now, I'm much better when a player can't find a block on a pull, particularly if he gets to level 2 and he can't find a block on a pull, or he moves to level 2 and he can't find a block, or it's zone blocking somehow, and he's a tackle, and the play's completely going away from him, and he can't really make an effective block. Those are kind of the non-critical errors for alignment. But when they get beat at the line of scrimmage, they allow penetration, they're in the process of giving up a pressure, but the ball is out quickly prior to the pressure taking impact. Those are more serious losses, and those are things that can become problems. But to see Bozeman cut his missed blocks at the line of scrimmage from 8 to 2 in this game. So it was 10 to 4 in total missed blocks, but 8 to 2 in losses at the line of scrimmage, I thought was really good.
How similar was the way he got beat on that pressure, on that sack, to, I think he, was there one similar to it in week one? I can't recall. In the way that he was beat. Do you remember that?
I've got to pull out my sheet here, because I'll have it, and we'll have, the action verb is the key on our sheet, and with Maureen doing this, I've got a chance to actually be able to read it, because it was my handwriting, I wouldn't. So let's see. He didn't get beat by too many pressures.
Okay.
He was unable to pick up blitz 55 is what I have from the Miami game. So is it McKinney or McKinnon or something? Who is the number 55 for the Dolphins? And I have one more, bulled by 95. That's Godshaw. And then another one where he had a half pressure. I don't think that's the one you're talking about, probably. So, I'm simple answer is I'm not sure, but I know what you're trying to see. Was there another one where he's just completely overwhelmed by somebody?
Yeah. Yeah, I have a vague recollection of it, but I can't pinpoint which play.
All right. Well, anyway, B+ for Bozeman in the game. Let's move on here. We're obviously taking some time here, but we're enjoying this, and so it's nice to be able to take our time sometimes. Matt Skura, kind of a difficult afternoon. He was involved in four separate run plays where there was a loss, and that includes the botched snap where he hit Andrews in the leg on the motion. So I counted that as a -2 for a loss. Very fortunately, Yanda fell on the football, and you know, Yanda is good for that once or twice a year, but it's something that they're going to have to cut back on our problems with the snap. Skura has had some issues with the shotgun snap that PFF has been charging him for. In fact, we couldn't figure out last week why his score was so low, and I inquired with PFF, and they said, well, it's really botched snaps, and there were a couple of those, but they said, well, they've already removed one, and his score went well up from that. So it's interesting to see, and Skura, otherwise, I didn't think he was terrible in this game. He did give up one pressure, I believe. And let me confirm that I'm reading that correctly here. Yes, he gave up one pressure. And one weird play otherwise I wanted to mention. He was flagged for ineligible man downfield on a pass play. And, you know, obviously it's not that big a deal in terms of the penalty. It's a 5-yard penalty. It does have option value with it, so it's worse than a false start. But here's what happened. It was a run-pass option. All three interior linemen, Bozeman, Skura, and Yanda, were all 3 yards upfield. I don't know how they flagged Skura for it as opposed to the other. It's like everybody's speeding. Why doesn't everybody get a ticket kind of thing?
Right.
But anyway, I split the charge for it to all three equally. But the problem is more systemic than that. If the game is going to be called that close with the Ravens RPO concept, I think they're going to pick up more of these fouls, which is a bad thing because they can really ruin drives because they give the defense the option of, you know, not playing that play or accepting, say, an incomplete pass on third down or even an interception.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to watch to see with the RPO, if that comes to fruition. There were two really, I thought, generally sloppy drives in terms of the offensive line play. Toward the end of the first half, there was a drive where they had some procedural penalties, a hold, a sack given up. And then to start the second half, there was a rough one. Perhaps that was second drive, I think, maybe second drive in the holding call. And then there was Stanley later on lined up illegally somehow after a big play.
That wasn't him. That was the receivers. Brown and I think Brown and Stanley were each flagged once for an illegal formation in this game, but in each case it was the receiver not lining up properly. The linemen were fine, but they were uncovered. Yeah, an illegal formation 79 on the last drive of the game. But yeah, you're right. I'm seeing the drives you're talking about. The end of the first half incredibly sloppy because it had holding penalty, sack, and then that snap into Andrew's legs on three consecutive plays.
Yeah, awful.
All right, well, let's move on if we're good with that. I gave Skura a D in this game for what it's worth, given the score he had. Marshall Yanda, I thought, had another fine game. The nice thing about Yanda is he always knows where his assignment is. He's good at moving quickly with that first step to get to his assignment. What was different about this game was they had Yanda pull 8 times. And I meant to, before this show, look back and see how long has it been since he's pulled 8 times in a game. But they don't power run to the left often because there's two important reasons. One is Yanda's outstanding on the pivot and they want him there to open the front gate, so to speak. But Orlando Brown is also their best point of attack push along the offensive line. And he's been very good at either hitting the scraping linebacker or getting that kick out appropriately on the other side or on the same side of that point of attack that they want on the power play. So I understand why they don't pull to the left as much, but Yanda at one time pulled an amazing amount. Sure. And to see him pull 8 times in this game is taking me back a few years. Yeah. And the game I always bring up to him is the wild card game at New England in 2009 when they won with a big first quarter.
Right.
Yanda pulled 19 times in that game and connected on 15 of them.
Yeah, the two key ones in this game to me, Ken, or two of the key ones. That third and one down at the goal line, you know, again, another mosh pit towards the left side with all the pullers and all the H-back coming down that way. But it's Yanda who pulls, and Ingram's extremely patient there, and that's who he follows to get that little 1.5 yards that we needed and seal the thing. And I think he pulls on that 2nd and 12, 11-yard run for Ingram as well. I think he pulls on that. So those two fourth quarter runs, very, very key.
Yep, he pulled on that. Four of those last six plays they had, he was pulling. But he was pulling. You're absolutely right.
It's interesting that you're seeing them using all four of those guys in pulls. Skura, left guard, left tackle, right guard. You know, a little more, it seems. So perhaps they will run a little bit more to the left side this year. Probably with Hill, the way they did in the first week. They need to get out on the perimeter a little bit more, I think, and he's the guy to do it. He and Lamar, of course, but yeah.
Exciting again, Yanda and A. Orlando Brown we'll talk about. Now, Orlando had the best game of his career in week one. He took a big step back in this game, unfortunately. We know about the two holding calls. One of those actually became a sack. If you're going to hold somebody, go ahead and hold them. and you know, you're not, once the flag is out, the flag is done. And Cassius Marsh was able to get his hand on Lamar's jersey and rip it. So there was a fair amount of evidence for that for a while, and eventually take him down for the sack. And that was late in the first quarter. I washed out Brown's holding for scoring purposes, because he got a -6 on the sack anyway, which would have been the same charge for the hold. But then he had another one. He held Suggs, and that negated the 9-yard run by Hill to the right. And like most holds, it probably wasn't necessary to stop the play. I don't think Suggs would have been able to catch Hill on the edge there, but it was kind of a bummer. He did give up 3.5 pressures in the game. Two of those were bull rushes by Suggs. I don't know how Suggs scored on PFF this week, but I thought he had a pretty good game personally. I know he didn't have a sack, but I thought he was effective, and Brown was unfortunately the recipient of some of that.
Yeah, I wonder. I'm a little suspicious of Brown still, particularly holding up against one-on-one in pass protection, and I wonder how much the coaches trust him in that. You know, a lot of times they're rolling help to his side, and he's a young player, but and last year he was a rookie, but you could see, you know, just big heavy feet, not great technique, and my opinion, for whatever it's worth, was that the grades that he was given were from PFF seemed a little high to me. I'm rooting for the guy. I'm watching him, and hoping that he improves. But it's not, when he gets one-on-one with a guy, it does not surprise me. He's beaten, unfortunately.
Yeah. We've talked about this enough on the show that I should feel bad about bringing this up again, but they finally charged Brown with this sack in this game. And for the longest time, I know they score this properly at PFF, where they'll give him a negative score on each of these plays that he's making a contribution to sacks. And I had 7 of them last year, 5 1-thirds and 2 2-thirds, including that playoff game where he had both of the two two-thirds. Mm-hmm. And they kept tweeting out all these things that accentuated the fact that he had 0 sacks by their system. Well, all that means is they're not really apportioning out all the sack shares, unfortunately. So I was sad to see it, but I'm glad this should finally stop those sorts of tweets about Orlando Brown now that they've actually given him a sack on record.
There we go.
All right. James Hurst in for one jumbo formation, made his only block, so we don't really need to talk about him. But I'll tell you, we do need to talk about one thing about him, is that to make room for for Kennedy, they allowed Gregory Sinat to walk, and the Chiefs pick him up on Monday, so he is no longer a Raven. It's a big loss. The Ravens picked up another guy for their practice squad who I've never heard of, a guard, but they are really naked now at left tackle in terms of what they would do if anything happened to Stanley.
Yeah. I I guess they would be leaning on Hurst or perhaps Macari. Let's keep our fingers crossed on that.
Yeah. I think it probably would be Hurst. I think another option would be moving Orlando Brown to left tackle, which I think would just disrupt two positions. I'd rather have Hurst struggle at left tackle, which he's delivered on that, you know, many times over the years, than have it be, a move that would potentially weaken two positions. So anyway. All right. Outstanding. I knew we would enjoy that conversation and just going through that with you and talking offensive line, always a pleasure.
Yes.
Let's talk about other skill position players. And we have talked about some of this during this, so we'll skip Marquise Brown, who had, another game with a fair number of targets here. We can't go the rest of the thing here without mentioning what kind of a historic year Mark Andrews is having, though, so far. And he's got 16 receptions now and 17 targets. Okay, for starters, that's outrageous. And, in of itself, it's good. But when I noticed something very peculiar statistically, both Brown and Andrews are within thousandths of each other, but not exactly the same, with 12.94 yards per target this season. Oh. Now think about that. 12.94 yards per reception for a receiver is outstanding, but 12.94 yards per target is normally reserved for people in the high teens and even 20 yards per catch. It is a very rare number. And to put this in context, there's only been three Ravens receivers in their history who've ever reached 10 yards per reception. And those are Derek Alexander in 1996 with 10.27, Todd Heap in 2010 with 10.32. And do you want to take a guess, Tim, at who the number one is prior to this year?
Got me.
Mark Andrews, 2018 at 11.04.
Wow. That's a great stat. Wow.
So, 11.04, both those guys right now are 1.9 yards ahead of the pace. Now, I know there's more 400 hitters in April than there are at the end of the season. So I'm not pretending like they can keep this up necessarily for the whole year. But they're running at a historic rate right now, and they seem to be very favored targets. And it'll be interesting to see what they can do.
Yeah, that 2018 – reference about Mark that speaks there. He is open, seemingly uncoverable. Mm-hmm. They know that he's throwing the football half the time, and he just bodies guys when he has to. There was a play right before the Ingram throw, and that was the one where they pulled Bozeman into protection. And Skura does it. Generally, Skura will do a pretty good job when he has to come over and cover against a gap being spiked to either side on those pulls. But anyway, I thought Lamar's on that particular play, we see Lamar step up into the pocket. I think he's working the pocket well, too, back to Lamar. But he steps up just a little bit for a little bit of pressure outside. He's he's watching for Nick Boyle behind the linebackers. And here comes Mark Andrews. And just sits it down instead of running into coverage. And those two are starting to just know each other so well. Mm-hmm. And Mark just puts his big old body right there in front of the safety coming down, and Lamar puts it on him. So Lamar is watching Nick, and he has a really good idea about what Mark Andrews is going to do. And it's amazing how quickly he comes off of Nick and just hits just the ball. Really quick release, too, by Lamar. Mm-hmm. Out and hits Mark. It just seems like he's just cannot be covered, which seems strange for a guy that's
it's
not extremely quick or any of that stuff,
I think you're hitting on exactly the points, though. It's really a two-way rapport there, because you see Andrews being able to body. First of all, Andrews sniffs out space as well as I've seen any tight end do for the Ravens ever, and that includes Todd Heap.
Uh-huh.
But Shannon Sharp, for that matter. Shannon Sharp had that ability too. But his he knows where Jackson wants to go. He and Jackson have a great rapport in terms of where the ball should be. So if he's in the open, he wants it at head height, and if it's not in the open, he knows just how to cover up on that football and where Jackson is likely to deliver it. And he does a great job of getting it. He hasn't had to go low for Jackson yet. Obviously, he's a big target. And that's what young quarterbacks love about tight ends, is you have a pretty wide catch radius to work with a lot of the time. But Andrews bodying up and using that basketball box out for the rebound kind of skills to keep that defender away, not really being bothered by contact. I mean, obviously, we saw one of the key plays in the game, Marquise Brown, get completely ridden to the ground for no pass interference. Right. And you know, that's something I don't think Mark Andrews would have even noticed the guy on his back. He just caught the ball and, you know, maybe had yards after the catch.
Right, right. How much, Ken, do we need to get Snead involved? How much do we need to get Boykin involved going forward? Start involving them more in the, let's say Snead. You know, Boykin's still young, but Snead had one target, I think. One reception, right. One target.
Well, he had a huge play at Miami. So there was that, and he, I think he might have been targeted a couple other times. I'm trying to remember, because he did drop one ball, and he had another ball that was called back by penalty by the sideline, which was about Lamar's only dangerous throw of the day.
Right. Okay.
So he's been targeted a few times. I don't think it's like they don't want to cover him. I think it's just a matter of there aren't enough resources to go around as it is. So Snead is going to draw a lot of single coverage. It should be an opportunity to get to Snead. And get yak throws to Snead, whether it's some of these slants where he's only got man coverage and could beat it for a big play, or, you know, beat somebody over the top too, like he did at Miami. So yeah.
The other fellow that I noticed was open a fair amount was Hurst. If you watch the tape, he's open. You know, he's running these routes, he's open. Even on the play we just talked about where he comes off of Boyle, that is, Lamar comes off of Boyle and hits Andrews, you see Hurst running wide, pretty near wide open down the sideline. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just interesting that he's like you said, there's not a ton of, there's a lot of receivers, and how it gets distributed is a not wait and see.
Good problem to have. And I do think they'll get Boykin involved. You know, he's been one of the guys who hasn't been as secure with the football, but you know, once they get him thrown open a few times and really using those physical gifts, he has the ability to high point that ball and be in single coverage with all the other things that are going on across the field. I think it's going to get good. They've tried route combinations that have freed up receivers using Brown's speed. And I think there will be more opportunities to do that. And pairing him up with Boykin may be the way to get him really going at some point, whether that's, you know, this week or next week, you know, to really get him a few catches and get on the board. They obviously were trying to do that during the preseason. Mm-hmm. They targeted him like crazy in those first couple of games, or the first quarter of the second and third game. I forget exactly which ones it was, but he just had a ton of targets.
Yeah, he had one-on-one on the outside, and Lamar went to him. It looked like he had a step on the DB, and I'd like to have seen him kind of get on top of him, and he doesn't. He kind of runs with him. Continues to run with him instead of getting on top of the receiver there. And I think it might have been an overthrow anyway, but he did have a nice – Boykin did have a nice catch on the sideline. I haven't gone back to watch it, but that was my inclination watching it live. Do you remember that? Did Boykin have a grab on the sideline?
He had one catch, and I'm trying to remember where it was, and it's not on my score sheet here, so I have to go back and do this. I think we got to leave it for next time, but you're right that he did have one catch there. I think we need to get our mailbag here, and we're a little bit behind on the show. So let's talk MVPs for this game in terms of, you know, we kind of do them hockey stars from 3 to 1. And I'll let you start if you want and give me your number three guy or do whatever you want.
It's a tough one. I'm going to go with the three that you have. Andrews, Jackson Brown, not Jackson Brown, the singer. Andrews, I'm going to start with Andrews. Let's go with Andrews first.
Okay, so Andrews is at number one or number three?
Number three.
Okay, number three. Okay, so my guy's Marquise Brown, number three. A lot of targets again this week. He's the only guy who's not consistently, quote unquote, catching the football. Boykin has actually had some problems too, but Brown is 12 for 18 catching the football. And it's amazing that a 67% catch rate is really one of the lower ones on this team when you have Andrews catching, you know, 16 out of 17 balls. But Brown, he's impacting other receivers, and that I am absolutely loving. Obviously made the big play in this game, made other plays early on to get some of the initial drives going, and that, including that first touchdown drive. But I am really loving the way he's impacting other routes and the general coverage scheme with his speed.
Amen. He does this on the very first play of the game. Lamar out of the end zone. He runs this little drag and pulls some of the coverage down underneath. And Boyle does a nice job kind of sitting and turning out, and Lamar hits him on a strike there. So all those kind of under routes force somebody to come up or not. You know, they don't come up. You know, they might just give him the ball.
It's just exciting to have weapons like that. You know, I've always kind of downplayed the need to have a number one receiver in a lot of ways, or a pure burner. I mean, last year, honestly, they had John Brown, and he had similar speed to Marquise Brown. Not quite as high end, not quite as devastating, but he was a speed guy and a similar receiver in a lot of ways in terms of his size. Jackson could do nothing with him. I mean, they didn't have a rapport. He caught 8 of 30 balls Jackson threw him in his starts. So it really just didn't work out. But anyway, Marquise, completely different player, and it's great to see that rapport between the two. How about your number two guy?
I guess that would be Marquise. If I go Andrews three, that's Marquise second.
Okay. Can't argue with that. We're all saying the same guys. So
yep.
If Jackson and Andrews are the two, Jackson's my two, Andrews is my one. I think we've talked about him enough on the show that we can kind of move on from there. Josh, tell us what you got in the mailbag this week, because I know we've had a very interesting week around the NFL.
Yes, and we addressed it on the last episode about the trade opportunities out there. So that is dominating the mailbag, but I believe we already covered that on the last episode. So instead, I want to got a couple of questions. First one up is from Q, who is wondering what's the deal with Moore lately, that he's not in number one depth.
Okay, do you want to talk about Tim for a second, or
go ahead, Ken, take that.
Okay, well, I just say Moore's not getting as many plays as he did. The thing he brings a couple things to the Ravens, as I see it, on offense. But he only had 7 snaps in this last game. Obviously, he's going to be pushed out some by Boykin and Brown. Brown is more obviously of a pure receiving threat, whereas Moore has a good bad ball radius, which I would have said before this year was very important to Lamar. But the other thing he gives him is a little bit better, or a lot better than Brown, actually, run blocking capability. In space. And so that's something that I think they want him for. They probably, if the year goes on and as injuries start to pile up, I'm sure Moore will get more playing time. But, you know, he's kind of been replaced in terms of his functionality. Boykin is a big body, should be a good blocker. You know, Seth Roberts, you pointed out this game, you know, made a really great run block in this game. He got 27 snaps. So there's other players ahead of him on the depth chart. Moore's been a tremendous special teams player. He's a very good receiver last year for the Ravens, but I think, you know, there are just other players here this year competing for time.
All right. I'm going to do something new on the mailbag to close out the mailbag. I'm going to combine 4 people's questions because they're all looking forward to next week. So Minion Hunter, Jacob, Justin, and there was another person in here. I'm combining all your questions. Really, the question is, the offense looked a little plain and simple this past week. So do you believe the Ravens are storing more in the tank to open up against the Chiefs this weekend? And with that, do you think we'll see many new plays? And who do you think will be those breakout players in the offense? Justin believes it'll be Boykin or Hill because of the shootout opportunity of this game. That should set you guys up to talk a little bit about next week.
Yeah, why don't you start this one, Tim, because I dominated that last question, then I'll respond.
I'm sure there's plenty of stuff that they haven't revealed yet, and I think it's ever-evolving week to week, opponent to opponent, series to series even. But I would say you're seeing it may not have the same visual flash, but there's a lot of sophisticated stuff already on tape. But yeah, sure, I'll expect to see new wrinkles every week. Who would be a breakout guy? I don't know. I'd like to see the run game. I'd like to see the run game really start hitting. I would.
Okay, well, for the good of the show, I'm going to go the other way, and I'm going to say if the Ravens get behind in this game, and it's Kansas City, so there's a good chance they're going to be behind at some point, that we're going to see more of opening it up with 4-0-1, meaning four receivers and one running back in the game. Actually, probably that those four wide receivers will include Andrews, and they might include Hurst in terms of getting them split, but they're gonna look at more of that. And I think when they have one running back in the game like that, we're going to see more of Justice Hill. And I think he is a good possibility for a breakout player. The mention of Boykin is very reasonable in terms of a breakout player who we haven't really seen too much from. I think it's less likely we're going to start seeing a player like Roberts get a lot of targets. It could happen at some point when Lamar all of a sudden hits him three times on one drive and realizes, hey, there's you know a particular set of balls that I can trust him on. But I think that Hill and Boykin would be two good players to pick to break out if the Ravens get behind in this ball game.
Might want to keep an eye out for some special teams trick play type things. I think maybe on the kickoff. I don't know, just a thought. Try to get the get an extra possession, maybe something, a trick play from.
So you're talking about an onside kick.
Some sort of an extra
play. Yeah. Well, when you're pulling off a trick special team play against the Dolphins when you're dominating them already, clearly when you need to win a game in a tough battle, those are always an option. Yeah. It's appeared on Sunday that Lamar, a lot of his deep balls were going a little bit too far. Is that something to be concerned about? Do we know what caused that? Is it just a misconnection, misrunning routes, or just a little too amped up? What do you think?
I'll start. Please, follow on, Tim. But you don't complete as many long balls as you do shorter balls. And Lamar had a astounding historic week in week one in terms of connecting on the deep ball. He also had a couple of misses in week one where he overthrew an open Brown, once on what was recalled by penalty, and another time that was just one of his three incompletes on the day. So, I'm not surprised to see some incomplete passes, and I'm very thrilled that he hit the one that really mattered, right on the money.
Yeah, he missed a couple. He missed a couple sort of over the linebackers, in between the safety and the linebackers. But Ken's right. I mean, just watching the Mayfield game, for two series, the guy missed three throws last night. And Lamar is just dynamic, and he's improving. I love the way that guy studies all the reports, how he works with these guys. And you also enjoy this great camaraderie. There's so much that goes along with Lamar. I wouldn't surprise me to see, a couple more misses. He's going to miss throws. And but as Ken said, there was just some spectacular stuff. And he's gutsy. He's gutsy as a thrower of the football, too. So,
I'm gonna want to respond to that because I saw a stat today that I thought was fantastic. He is near the bottom of the league in terms of aggressive throws. In fact, he's ninth best in the league for the fewest throws thrown with a defending player within 1 yard at 12.3%. And to me, that was fantastic. And at the top end of that, by the way, Drew Brees is 8.3%, Mahomes 9.1%, Garoppolo after that. But so it is good quarterbacks that tend to be there. It oftentimes is the guys who are trailing in games who are forced to hit into tight windows, like Ryan Fitzpatrick and Deshaun Watson so far this year, Kyler Murray, who have these more aggressive throw profiles. And Fitzpatrick has 28% aggressive throws this year. Mm. But the point I'm making is that Lamar Jackson's interceptions aren't down by accident. He's making very good decisions. He's throwing his receivers open. He has the speed in receivers to throw those guys open. So they're helping too. And those aggressive throws being down is a very cool stat that Lamar has quietly accomplished with all the other very loud accomplishments.
Yeah, there's separation out there too. There's guys that he's hitting that are clear. And I wonder if that has an effect on it as well. But yeah, I can't think of too many dangerous throws. You mentioned the one to Snead in week one where he kind of threw it into triple. It looked like it was almost triple coverage there.
It was tipped up and Steve got it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that'll do it for the mailbag. Now continue to get your questions in as we will be doing the Know Your Foe episode in just a couple of days to really look ahead to this Chiefs game on Sunday. Tim, tell me about your YouTube channel.
The channel's called Edgar Allen, Edgar Allen. It's really just for Ravens fans. It's something I like doing just so all of us can kind of watch, you know, so all of us can watch these plays a little more closely. It's just for Ravens fans.
Okay, so well done stuff. I just want to say there's several people out doing YouTube videos, and Coach Evans is there, Edgar right. Allen is there, and I'm trying to think of the third one I meant to mention. Oh, Justin, Ingrid. Who we had on the show. So go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, that's what I was going to say. There's great content over there on YouTube. You should be checking it out. Tim, thanks for joining us. Ken, what's going on over at filmstudyravens.com?
Oh, you got the usual stuff this week, 3 podcasts. This is the second of the 3, the offense. We're going to do the Know Your Foe with a guy named Will Fight. Great name there. Mm-hmm. Who is a Kansas City Chiefs expert. Tim, I can't even tell you how much we've enjoyed this. I knew this was going to be good based on the online discussion we've had about the offensive line and other elements. I didn't have any idea that it would be quite this good. We'd love to have you on again sometime later in the season, talk about the offense. We do this on a rotating basis, but the good ones, we want to have back a second time. Let's put it that way.
I'm grateful, man. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
All right, guys. We'll talk later.
When your entire life is online, you need more than just speed from your internet. Xfinity gives you reliable in-home Wi-Fi coverage, plus protection from Wi-Fi network threats. Check out our amazing offers on Xfinity Internet. You'll get fast speed and Wi-Fi coverage you can count on. Plus, get advanced security free with the XFi Gateway, so you can keep the connected devices in your home protected from network threats. Just log in and activate through the Xfinity app. Go online, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit a store today to learn more. Restrictions apply.
Introducing the Lowe's List for Innovation. While our aisles are filled with innovative products, we've selected our favorites just for you. Like the exclusive Whirlpool washer with industry-first 2-in-1 removable agitator. We love this washer because you can customize any load. And with other smart features to streamline your laundry routine, this product is a must-have for families. Shop the full Lowe's List of top picks at Lowe's.com. Lowe's, home to any budget, home to any possibility. U.S. only.